Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's now 10 o'clock and it's time to commence our meeting here today. And I'm Graham Bradley, the Chairman of the Board, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the 2023 Annual General Meeting of United Malt Group Limited. And this is our third AGM since we'd emerged from GrainCorp in 2020, and it's our first AGM that we've been able to hold with our shareholders to participate in person. We also have shareholders and others participating online in today's meeting. Today is what we will call, therefore, a hybrid AGM. The AGM is an opportunity, of course, for shareholders to hear from and put questions to the board, to the Managing Director and CEO, and to our external shareholders. Welcome, Elizabeth, Helen. So I encourage all shareholders to use the various platforms, either here in the meeting or online, to ask any questions or make any comments they'd like to make. I'll start by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land on which this AGM is being held, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, pay my respects to elders past and present, and extend that respect to any Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander people who may be joining us here today. Before we commence the official business of the meeting, I have a few things to say of a technical nature relating to this hybrid AGM. If you experience any difficulties during the meeting, please contact the helpline number, which those of you who are online will see on your screen. If we do experience a technical issue today, we may need a short recess or adjournment, and in which case I'll advise accordingly. But if we're unable to advise because of a major technical difficulty, we'll make an announcement on the ASX platform about the adjournment. I'd like to introduce now my fellow directors. So sitting at the front with me is our Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer, Mark Palmquist, and also our new Non-Executive Director, Christine Feldmanis. They're both joining me in person today, and Christine is standing for election later in this meeting. She joined the board only on the 1st of January this year. Also joining me here in person is our company secretary, Lisa Jones, our interim chief financial officer, Ryan Dutcher, and also we welcome Scott Walsh, who is partner in our external auditors, PricewaterhouseCoopers, and we have representatives of Link Market Services, our share registry. We have two non-executive directors, Gary Myers and Patrick Bowe, who are joining us remotely by teleconference from the United States. In Australia, via teleconference, I also welcome our Australian-based non-executive director, Terry Williamson, who cannot join us today, unfortunately, for health reasons. Jane McAloon was also unable to join us in person here today and sends her apologies. Welcome also members of United Malt's executive team and representatives of Gilbert and Tobin, our external legal advisors, and KPMG, our internal auditors. Before moving to the addresses, I will outline the agenda for the meeting. It's a pretty straightforward agenda this year, and how you should ask questions and vote during the course of the meeting. The virtual meeting guide has been lodged with the ASX and is also available on the company's website. Should you have any difficulties viewing the presentations during the meeting, I can confirm that the presentations and the addresses were lodged earlier this morning via the ASX announcement platform. The details of the formal business are set out in the notice of meeting, which was distributed to shareholders on the 10th of January. My address and the address of this chief executive will be delivered shortly, and those were released to the market prior to the start of this meeting and have been published on the ASX website and also on the company's website. Following the conclusion of today's meeting, for those here in person, you're invited to join the board and management outside the theatre for some refreshments. Let me explain the question and voting procedures today. Shareholders and proxy holders will have the opportunity to ask questions on each item of business. There'll also be an opportunity for shareholders and proxy advisors to ask general questions relating to the management of the company when we consider the company's financial report for the 2022 financial year, which will be the first item of business. There are two ways to ask questions. Firstly, by using a microphone, and we have a couple here in the theatre, so put up your hand and we'll get one to you. for those in the auditorium holding yellow or blue cards. If you need assistance, please ask for it. For those online, the information I'm about to provide is contained in the online meeting guide available in the download section on your screen. You'll see at the bottom of your screen three boxes: ask a question, get a voting card, and downloads. To ask a question, click the Ask a Question button. Seems pretty straightforward. And follow the prompts. Online questions will be read aloud by our company secretary during the relevant item of the business. To ensure you have enough time to type and submit your questions, I encourage you to submit your questions as soon as possible. It's important that questions are succinct and relate to the relevant items of business. The order in which we will address questions for each item of business will be first questions from shareholders present at the theatre, and then followed by questions online. We'll endeavour to respond to as many questions as possible, should we have a plethora of them, but if we receive multiple questions on the same topic, we will amalgamate those questions in the interests of time and clarity. I'll now outline the voting procedures for today's meetings. All items of business will be voted on by poll, and a representative of United Malt Share Registry, Link Market Services, is the returning officer for this meeting, and I declare the polls now open. If you're eligible to vote, there are two ways you can cast your vote, in person or online. For shareholders present in the theatre, you will have a yellow voting card, which you will be asked to complete and hand to the registry staff at the appropriate time at the end of the meeting. I'll advise you when it is time to complete your voting card, and if you need assistance, please ask one of the registry staff. If you have a yellow voting card and need to leave early, please hand in your completed card to the registry staff as you leave. Cast your vote online, please click the Get a Voting Card button and follow the prompts. You may cast your live vote at any time during the meeting. I'll give a 5-minute warning before the close of the online voting platform. You'll see a red bar appear at the top of the online platform, for those of you online, with a countdown timer for how long you have remaining to cast your vote. Where undirected proxies have been given to me as chair of this meeting, I confirm that, as set out in the notice of meeting, I'll vote the undirected proxies in favour of all resolutions. I'll vote all directed proxies given to me as chair at the meeting in accordance with the directions I've been provided. We will display on the screen the number of direct and proxy votes received prior to the meeting when we come to each resolution. But the final result of voting will be released to the market as soon as they are available, and a recording of today's meeting and the outcome of the voting will be available on our company website later today. So I'll now turn to my address. And I'll just make sure I have it. In my address this morning, I'd like to provide a brief summary of the FY22 results and the steps we continue to take to improve and strengthen the business following what was a disappointing year for all of us and for shareholders. These are steps we believe will underpin an improvement in our financial performance in FY23, current year, and beyond. I'll also provide an update on board and CEO succession. Following my address, Mark Palmquist will provide a more detailed information on the company's performance over the past year and on our outlook for FY23. First, our FY22 results. This past year was a challenging year for the company. In October 2021, when we reported the results for that year, we expected improving market conditions as the pandemic appeared to be on the wane. But as we reported in our annual report, our business was adversely affected by several headwinds during the past year. Firstly, a resurgent COVID-19 impacts across our key markets. A severe drought affecting the Canadian barley crop. Significant disruption to ocean and rail supply chains. And increased freight and energy costs. While certain challenges do remain, several of these headwinds are expected to abate as FY23 progresses. The company's group underlying earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortisation in FY22 was $105.9 million, which was down 23% on the prior year. Our group underlying EBITDA excludes a software as a service charge of $13.3 million associated with our major new IT systems projects, and also a one-off impairment of $0.8 million for the sale of our Brewer Select business in the United Kingdom. With these items included, our statutory earnings before interest, tax and depreciation was $91.8 million, and our net profit after tax for the year was $11.6 million, which was down from $14.5 million in FY21. As a result of that performance, the board did not declare a final dividend in FY22. So total dividends for the year were 1.5 cents per share, which represented still 40% of the full year's underlying net profit after tax. Looking ahead, your board expects a progressive recovery in earnings during FY23, and we expect to resume dividend payments in line with our policy to distribute approximately 60% of underlying net profit after tax as dividends to shareholders. The board and management continue to implement several initiatives to strengthen our management capability, renegotiate prices, and improve commercial terms with our larger customers to de-risk our barley sourcing and increase discipline and rigour in costs and capital management during the past several months. We're also improving the timeliness and quality of performance reporting to top management and to the board. These measures mean that the group is better placed to respond effectively to volatile market conditions should they occur in the future. Meanwhile, in recent months, sea freight and container rates and availability have improved, as has the reliability of rail transport in North America. Gas prices are also moderating in most of our key markets. Importantly, we're progressing improving our contract terms with major customers in ways that will reduce our risk exposure to barley supply, quality and prices, and our exposure to additional energy costs and freight surcharges. New pricing terms are progressively coming into effect from 1st of January 2023 and will flow through to our results from the second, third and fourth quarters of this financial year. Our first half results for the year, which we will report in May, will therefore reflect a half year in which combines two very different quarters, and we will seek at that time to highlight the improvement in the second quarter over the first quarter. Lastly, as part of the group-wide transformation project, we have further streamlined our organisation to bring together the operations, transport, management and marketing functions of the processing division and the warehouse and distribution division to achieve greater efficiency and more focused customer relationship management. In view of these organisational changes, we expect to report our full year FY23 results as a single segment rather than two segments, which we've traditionally reported. Based on all of the above, we are targeting an improvement in the company's financial performance in FY23 with a further step up in earnings in FY24. This improvement is aided by the abatement of several of the headwinds that impacted us over the last year. In particular, the North American crops were good, and so we do not anticipate the supply and quality problems we experienced last year in Canada. However, we are carefully monitoring the impact of inflation and any potential impact of recessionary concerns on beer demand. Turning to our financial position, as reported in November, the company's net debt to EBITDA ratio temporarily exceeded our target range of 2 to 2.5 at 30 September 2022. This was due to lower earnings and also, importantly, the increased value of both our barley and malt inventories as a result of high barley prices in all of our key markets, together with the additional intake of barley which we needed in the lead up to commencing production at our new expanded Scottish facility in Inverness. We maintain strong relationships with our major banks, for which we're grateful, all of whom provided covenant amendments in respect of our 30 September 22 and our 31 March 23 testing dates, and we have also secured additional inventory funding to accommodate the higher inventory values and the increased requirements for the Invernet expansion. And we've entered into also factoring arrangements under which we may factor up to approximately $90 million of our receivables to provide further short-term financing flexibility. We expect to work with our banks during the current financial year to restructure our debt facilities to separate our short-term commodity inventory funding facilities from our core debt facilities, which will remove the impact of higher commodity inventory values and seasonal intake requirements from our covenant test. Our expected progressive improvement in earnings in the current financial year, together with significantly reduced capital expenditure as our major projects complete, mean that we have a clear pathway to our target net debt to EBITDA range of 2 to 2.5 times by September of this year. I confirm, therefore, the board does not envisage the need to raise any equity capital to meet our balance sheet requirements in FY23. Turning now to board renewal, there have been a number of changes on the board during the past year. The focus of our board renewal program is to ensure that we have the requisite diversity of skills and experience on the board to assist management to deliver the company's strategy and to oversee the company's governance and risk management. Also, we've sought to reflect the geographic focus of our business, particularly in North America, which accounts for more than half of our annual revenues. Pat Bowe, who stands for re-election at this meeting, will address the meeting shortly, was appointed to the board in September last year. Pat has 40 years' experience in agribusiness, including grain trading, agricultural processing, and supply chain management. He's currently the President and Chief Executive Officer of The Andersons, Inc., an Ohio-based Fortune 500 listed agricultural supply and chain company. Pat stands for election, and we'll hear from him shortly. Also, a third North American director, Mary Clark, will be joining us on the 1st of March. Mary has had an extensive executive career in food, beverage and ingredient businesses, including roles in general management, operations, sales and marketing, strategy and technology management. She's currently a senior vice president of innovation at Firmenich, a leading flavors and food ingredient supplier. She was formerly president and CEO of the North American operations of Naturex, Inc., which was a leading supplier of natural ingredients to the food and beverage sectors, and we very much look forward to adding Mary's expertise to our board. Mary, as I said, will be our third North American-based director following the appointment of Gary Mize and Pat Bowe to the board over the past 18 months. Christine Feldmanis, who's sitting at the front here today, joined the board on the 1st of January, and she is an experienced Sydney-based director who's served on a range of government, private and public companies over the past 20 years. She's currently a director of Rabobank Australia, where she chairs the Audit Committee. She is also a director of Utilities Australia Trust, Bell Financial Group and Omni Bridgeway. Christine is standing for election and she'll also address us a little later. Barbara Gibson retired from the board on the 31st of December last. Barbara joined the board of GrainCorp in 2011 and subsequently agreed to join the United Malt board at the time of our demerger in 2020. Finally, Jane McAloon has decided not to seek re-election at today's AGM and therefore Jane will retire at the conclusion of this meeting. Since her appointment in early 2020, Jane has served as the chair of our Remuneration and Nominations Committee and a member of the Audit and Risk Committee. Both Barbara and Jane have given very valuable service and advice to United Malt. They've made an outstanding contribution to the company following our ASX listing 3 years ago. And on behalf of the board and shareholders, I extend sincere thanks to both Barbara and to Jane for their significant contribution. Turning now to CEO succession. In October last year, Mark Palmquist informed the board of his intention to retire from his role as our chief executive during FY23. The board is well progressed in a global search for Mark's successor, with the focus being on North American-based candidates. We will make a further announcement on this process as soon as possible. Meanwhile, Mark will remain in his role until his successor is appointed to assist with an orderly transition. As this will be Mark's last AGM appearance, and his ninth in Australia since he became the CEO of GrainCorp, I want to acknowledge and thank Mark on behalf of all shareholders for his service to the company and the pivotal role he's played in establishing United Malt as a listed company and for his continued leadership. So on behalf of you all, Mark, thank you. Now, summarising, we anticipate a materially improved result in FY23 and confirm our earlier guidance that we expect underlying earnings before interest, tax, depreciation and amortisation before the charges for software as a service to be in the range of $140 to $160 million, assuming no material deterioration in market conditions. We anticipate a further increase in earnings in FY24 from the full implementation of our improvement initiatives, which I've outlined, and including the new expansion in Inverness, plus our cost efficiency initiatives and our new contract terms. So in closing, ladies and gentlemen, I want to acknowledge my board colleagues, and that includes the two retiring directors, Jane and Barbara, and our executive team and our employees for their dedication and hard work in what has been a very challenging year for the company. I also extend thanks to our shareholders for their continued support. So with those remarks, I will now invite Managing Director Mark Palmquist to address the meeting.
Thanks, Graham. Appreciate the comments, and good morning to everyone. I have to tell you, it's really nice to have some shareholders back in attendance in person. Certainly, this being my last AGM, I'm glad to see that we're progressing here into a hybrid process. I also want to thank everybody who's online virtually with us and appreciate their attendance as well. So today, I'd like to provide some further context for our financial results in 22 and on our strategy to strengthen the business. And then I will conclude with an update on current conditions and an outlook for FY23. So first, I start with safety. And our safety performance in FY22 didn't meet our expectations. While our lost time injury frequency rate did improve, we saw a disappointing increase in the recordable injury frequency rate, with the total numbers of recordable injuries increasing by 5. Now, that was driven predominantly by poor performance in our Canadian plants with an increase in manual handling injuries. We've implemented initiatives to improve our safety performance in FY23. That includes greater focus on ergonomics, assessment of our manual handling tasks, and manager and supervisor training across all the businesses. Moving on to FY22 results. In relation to our financial results, Graham indicated FY22 was a very challenging year for the malting industry, and our results were disappointing. Our processing segment in North America was adversely impacted by a number of external events, including the severe drought in Canada. It caused about a 35% reduction in the total barley crop from the prior year, significantly reduced the availability of malt quality barley as well. Other impacts included the supply chain disruptions, increased costs, and the need to import barley, which could not be fully passed on to customers, and accelerating input cost inflation. A solid result from our warehouse and distribution segment was not sufficient to offset the impact of performance in the processing segment. As a result, group underlying EBITDA, before SAS costs and one-off items, was $105.9 million. Statutory NPAT was $11.6 million compared to $14.5 million from FY21. Capital expenditures was $91 million compared to $103 million in FY21. The bulk of this spend was on growth initiatives in the year, with $50 million spent on the expansion of our new facility in Inverness. FY22 represented the peak in our growth CapEx spend as the Scottish build completes. For the next few years, we expect that the base CapEx will be in a range of approximately $55 to $60 million. Graham has also commented on our balance sheet and temporary increase in our net debt to EBITDA ratio. I want to make a few comments on this subject. Our term debt at year-end FY22 was broadly unchanged. What did change was the increase in our short-term commodity inventory financing requirements, which is primarily related to the higher barley price, and also the additional barley purchased at higher prices in the lead-up to the commencing production of our new Scottish facility in Inverness. This results in a timing issue, as we have the commodity inventory on hand before we make those sales to customers. This temporarily impacts our net to EBITDA ratio as it incorporates both the value of our term debt as well as our short-term commodity inventory financing, which fluctuates with the quantity and the price of barley on hand. As Graham indicated, we received covenant amendments from our banks in respect of 30 September 2022 and 31 March 2023. And we have additional inventory funding capacity to accommodate these expanded short-term requirements. However, you will be aware our short-term commodity inventory financing reflects the barley inventory value. If we exclude this from our net debt, this would give us a core debt to EBITDA of about 2x as of September 2022. We have a clear pathway back to the target gearing range by the end of September 2023, which is being driven by several key items. First, we expect an improvement in earnings from the second quarter and for the remainder of the year. Second, there will be a significant step down in CapEx commitments in FY23, primarily as a result of the completion of the new facility in Inverness. Third, we have entered into a factoring arrangement for up to approximately 90 million Aussie dollars, which gives us further short-term flexibility, and we'll be utilizing this in the current period. Notwithstanding the challenging year we experienced over the past year, we remain focused on delivering recovery and earnings and implementing our strategy for growth. In August last year, we held an investor day to outline the key components of our strategy, which targets high-value markets where the long-term outlook for growth remains supportive. In the short term, we're taking a more proactive approach to managing risk, with improved pricing and commercial terms to better capture the true cost to serve our customers. This includes pricing malt to customers more frequently when we have more certainty on the barley crop quality and price, and take a more disciplined approach to managing customers' commitments. We're also progressively including more frequent freight price adjustments and inflation cost escalation in our customer agreements. Internally, we are focused on improvements to our business practices to bring further rigor and discipline in contract negotiations. We have consolidated leadership of our sales teams to approach customers in a more consistent way and improve the coordination between procurement and sales functions to ensure we have better visibility into crop and product quality before making commitments to customers. We've also established a new internal legal function in North America to improve internal procedures and contract approval and management processes. As part of our proactive approach to managing risk, we have entered into a derivative contract to manage the risk of variability of the barley crop yield in Canada. Now, the purpose of the contract is to provide additional financial risk mitigation for our processing operations in Canada in periods that may experience significantly reduced barley crop yields. While we have certainty over our crop requirements for the current year, this contract will provide additional risk mitigation to manage the effect of a potentially reduced barley crop yield in our customary barley origination provinces in Canada for FY24. Had this contract been in place, when we experienced a material reduction in the Canadian barley crop production, United Malt would have received a payment of $30 million Canadian dollars, which would have significantly increased our FY22 earnings. These are important steps to ensure a more resilient business, which is better equipped to manage external volatility. Our focus is on ensuring a more rigorous approach to capital, cost, and cash discipline across all elements of our business. This will be supported by a transformation program, which is focused on renewing our organization and technology platforms to create a simplified, more efficient, and effective organization. Across the group, we are consolidating from 5 separate IT systems to a single platform. This will create benefits for our business as we streamline processes and have a real-time visibility of information on a consistent basis. This will enhance our decision-making and improve our customer experience. We expect to complete the implementation of the new technology platform in 2023. The new enterprise resource planning platform and the transport management system are well advanced and are being progressively deployed across the business. The majority of our SaaS costs related to these IT projects in FY23 will be incurred in the first half. The progress of the ERP implementation is allowing us to make further simplification efforts across the group. We have now commenced combining the activities of our processing and warehouse and distribution businesses from sales to marketing to operations and supply chain activities, which are now being operated under single leadership. These initiatives will support our transformation program, and we remain committed to achieving approximately $30 million in net transformation benefits in EBITDA by FY24. Our Scottish distilling expansion has completed dry commissioning and will commence wet commissioning next week. We expect to be producing commercial quality malt by March. Our new capacity is underpinned by agreements with key distilling customers. Robust demand remains. We have approximately 98% of the new volume already committed for FY23. Operating as a sustainable business remains a core objective of United Malt. We're working on developing a robust roadmap for the future to develop our commitment, plan, and timeframes associated with our tangible emissions reduction. We intend to align our commitments and reporting with the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. We've already invested in developing our Sustainable Agriculture Roadmap, which defines our activities for preserving the sustainability of our barley supply and improving our efficiency by reducing waste, energy, water, and other resources. During this past year, we successfully implemented our new OptiSteep technology at our Pocatello plant, which reduces water consumption by up to 30% during the steeping phase. Other examples of our sustainability initiatives are contained within our sustainability report, which is available on our website. Let me change and talk about some overall comments that I have for the outlook of the remainder of the year. Notwithstanding the significant challenges of FY22, the fundamentals of our industry and business remain positive. Beer remains a significant beverage category, and beer consumption has not typically been significantly impacted in periods of recession. During the past few weeks, major international brewers have pointed to demand generally remaining resilient on a value basis. However, some brewers have reported a potential risk of softer demand and down trading as consumers respond to inflation and recessionary concerns. We continue to closely monitor the potential impact of these consumer trends on malt demand. While we've seen a small reduction in our volumes in the first quarter, this has been offset by improved pricing and commercial terms. We expect earnings to improve from the second quarter, benefiting from the progressive implementation of these improved commercial arrangements, better capturing the true cost to serve our customers. Malt whiskey production is also expected to continue its upward trend, and demand for distilling continues to grow, with United Malt's customers laying down spirits for 10-plus years for aged whiskey. As mentioned earlier in my address, our customers' demand in Scotland remains robust, with approximately 98% of the new volume already committed for the year, and the majority under long-term agreements for future years. We've seen a significant improvement in the quality of the barley crop in North America, with harvests completed in the U.S. and Canada. Production yield and tonnage is well in excess of last year, with quality also improved. We expect progressive improvement in our customer contracts, including pricing and commercial terms, to better capture the true cost to serve over the course of the year. Additionally, we expect earnings as a result of the expansion of our capacity in Scotland, with the Inverness facility expected to be producing commercial quality malt for March and the continued delivery of our transformation program benefits. Our guidance for FY23 has not changed since the release of our full year results in November, and we continue to expect underlying EBITDA before SaaS costs for FY23 to be in the range of $140 to $160 million, assuming no material deterioration in market conditions. As we indicated in November, earnings will be weighted towards the second half, reflecting the progressive implementation of new commercial terms from January 2023 and the startup of the new facility in Inverness in March. First half earnings expectations remain unchanged from the previous guidance of $58 to $66 million before SaaS costs, again, assuming no material deterioration in market conditions. So as a conclusion, as some shareholders may be aware, in October last year, I advised the board of my intentions to retire as managing director and CEO during FY23. It has been an absolute privilege to serve as CEO of your company during its first 3 years as a standalone company. And I believe the time is right for a new chief executive to lead United Malt for the next period of development. I remain very committed to the role while the board completes a search for the successor to ensure an orderly transition of a new CEO. In closing, I would really like to acknowledge the hard work of our people across our operations for their dedication, their commitment over a very challenging year for our business. And I also want to thank you as shareholders for your continued support of the company. Thank you. Graham, I'll hand it over to you. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Mark. Ladies and gentlemen, now I welcome any questions or comments in relation to my report or the CEO's report before we move on to the other items of business. Yes, please, sir.
Hi, my name is Roman. I'm shareholder, personnel, plus my self-managed super fund. I would like to thank Mark for his great work in the Grand Coop and then in the United Malt Company. But I do have a question. When you split the company, you had a bright future. Everything looked bright, great. You did capital raising, great. What happened? What happened to the company? You took the best. Grand Coop went up a lot. I'm very pleased with Grand Coop. You took the best people for Grand Coop. What happened?
Thank you for the question, sir. Grand Coop and United Malt have been impacted by very different market forces and events over the last 3 years since we demerged. Our demerger took place, as you recall, in March of 2020, which was the month that COVID arrived. The pandemic began around the world. At the same time, 2020, 2021 and 22 were very good rainfall years in Australia. So GrainCorp has benefited materially from the increased production and, of course, therefore the increased logistics and charges for their services in the domestic and export of grain on the east coast of Australia. At the same time, we've been affected by significant disruption and closure in most countries in which we operate, North America, Europe, Australia, of many hospitality outlets. And, of course, that has particularly affected the craft brewing sector, which is one of our core strengths and has been traditionally and will continue to be in the future. But because of those dislocations of the smaller craft brewers, who often could distribute only through their on-premise restaurants or brew pubs, we, of course, faced a significant downturn in demand from those customers. We thought that might be a one-year phenomenon. It turned out to be a two-year phenomenon, and quite frankly, it's become a three-year phenomenon. If you recall that we only saw the Omicron variant really rear its head up a year ago, and that has continued to impact on the FY22 results. We think those forces, of course, have now waned. In addition to that, we had last year a significant profit hit because of the Canadian barley crop, an unprecedentedly bad crop in Canada, probably once in 20 to 30 year phenomenon. We've now taken steps to protect that risk for the future. We also found, to be frank with you, sir, that we were not able to pass on many of the additional costs that we incurred due to that barley crop failure to our customers under our contract arrangements. We imported barley from Australia and Denmark into Canada, which is one of the largest barley-growing countries in the world, so an unprecedented requirement in order to continue to serve our brewing customers. But we weren't able to fully pass those freight and additional costs on to the customers. We will in future because we have restructured our contracts to protect against those downsides. So two very different sets of circumstances have impacted the company adversely. Having been chair of GrainCorp at the time of demerger, I believe it was exactly the right thing to do. So that each of those very different businesses that are affected by very different and volatile circumstances, normally GrainCorp being affected by more volatility due to Australia's weather patterns than we would be, given our diversity of our business around the world. But nevertheless, we've been impacted by different forces. But I think it was exactly the right thing to do in the interest of shareholders for us to demerge the companies. It's unfortunate that we've been hit by 3 years of dislocation, which has been reflected in our poor share price and our reduced earnings. Very confident, though, that those headwinds have largely abated, not entirely. We still have high energy costs around the world compared to 3 years ago. We still have some freight dislocation in supply chains, but not as bad, perhaps, as it was last year. And we certainly know that the crops in North America, Scotland and Australia have been very, very positive this year. And look to be positive in the year ahead, given rainfall circumstances in Australia, for example. So we think those forces at work will abate and that we can resume the kind of performance that we all expected at the time of the demerger. I hope that helps you understand your question, sir. Other questions, please? There's one over here.
Good morning. Thank you, Chairman. My name's Stephen Fonte, shareholder. Just wondering, can you tell us the cost of the derivative contract?
It's a modest premium. I don't think we have that in the public domain, do we?
No, we don't.
No, it's a major global insurer. It's an innovative product. We don't think a similar arrangement has been created in the market in the past. We certainly didn't know of them in the future. We went out looking for one. And we're obliged not to disclose the cost, but let me say that it's a relatively modest cost compared to the assurance it will give us should we have bad crops in Canada again. Canada is more prone to seasonal cyclicality in crop than most of our supply in North America, because a lot of the North American barley is from irrigated land, whereas Canada is largely are weather dependent, as it is in Australia. While it's been a very reliable country over many, many years, they have had the occasional multi-decadal impacts of drought. So we've protected ourselves from that, we think, adequately at a very modest premium. Other questions, please? Okay. So if there are no other questions, let us move on. Oh, sorry. Down the front. Didn't see you, Elizabeth, sorry.
Elizabeth Fish from the Australian Shareholders Association. We wanted to know, how far out does the company set the sale price for malted barley to customers, and who is accountable for setting the price?
Okay. I think that's a question. Mark, you may like to explain that.
Yeah, be happy to. So even in long-term agreements, the barley price gets set in the year coming up. So it's never more than a year at a time. And one of the changes that we are doing inside the organization is that we don't price it all at once. We actually price it during various times over the year so that we have better certainty of, one, beginning is how much is being planted in each one of the regions, so we understand the acreage. We can look at the weather profile and then actually see what gets planted versus the forecast, and start to see a projection in terms of how the quality of crop is turning out so that we can now make some observations of potential yield, but as well as the quality. So that's a fundamental change that we have incorporated into our 2023. Our malt contracts actually run on calendar year. So the effect of the change in our contracts for FY23 are now starting in the 1st of January, and we have virtually none priced for 24 at this point in time.
And responsibility for the...
Responsibility, we have reorganized and we have combined our commercial teams across the organization into one, being led by one individual who reports directly to me. So we spend time looking at what is the risk profile and finding ways that we can actually mitigate the risk, but also gain some opportunities.
And I think, Mark, you might add that there's a delegation to the marketing team up to certain size and level of contract and cost. Other matters must come up for your approval.
That's correct, yeah.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Both dividends?
Well, it's our, given it the improved outlook for our earnings, we would be hopeful that we will be able to resume dividend payments this year with our half-yearly announcement in May. Yes. Sorry, did I see any other, sort of a bright light here, so are there any other hands up? There is one.
Oh, hi. I'm David Pearce, SMFS trustee. Just a question. In the last 3 months, could you make any comment about, or perhaps a question for Mark, actually, about the rebound in craft brewer demand and whether the growth rates are returning to a similar growth rates to prior to COVID, et cetera?
Yeah. Good. Very, thank you for that question. And Mark, I think you'd like to comment.
Yeah, I'd be happy to answer that. So the craft is rebounding, but it's not all the way back to pre-COVID levels. What appears when we talk to our craft customers is one of the issues they're actually struggling with is labor, that the increase in the price doesn't seem to be the issue that's holding back that demand increasing all the way up to pre-COVID-19. It's really a result of where many of the craft brewers and their tap rooms are running less hours of having their establishments open because it's a labor issue. So that's particularly noticeable in North America, which is the big major portion that we have of our craft business. Australia is a little bit similar, but we have seen a good rebound back in Australia. So it's kind of mixed differences, but that's the main issues that we're seeing.
And you might want to comment on the continued growth of craft distilling.
A very nice growth market, and that's spreading across the globe. Actually, Australia was in front of that, more growth in boutique distilling and a lot of them, including one that we have out on the table that we supply the malt to, are receiving very good international awards for the quality of their distilling products, both whiskey and gin. And we're seeing that now growing at a very substantial rate in both U.S. and Canada, and also overseas, U.K., Europe. We're seeing the boutique distilling area growing, which fits us extremely well.
Thank you. One more question, sir.
Given the international nature of our business, do we hedge for currency risks or not?
Again, that's a good question for the managing director.
Yeah. So we hedge to make sure that we're not experiencing any cost versus revenue disparities. So a case in point would be is we produce a lot of malt in Canada that gets sold against the U.S. dollar or it gets sold against the Japanese yen. And so we hedge that relationship. When it comes to reporting at the end of the year and translating to Aussie dollars, we don't hedge the translation. We just hedge actual cost versus revenue, just to make sure that we're not experiencing currency trends that is upsetting the margins that we're locking in.
I think that's a pretty normal approach that most companies would take to avoid having a currency risk where they've got costs not aligned with the currency in which they're selling their products. But in terms of their overall balance sheet at year-end, we will be affected by how the Australian dollar moves relative to the US, the British pound, and the yen to some extent, although mostly it's the US and Canadian and UK currencies. Further questions? Elizabeth, then.
Provisioned for a write-off. When will the market know what's happened to that $4.7 million?
I don't think we can give you a definitive time frame. We're continuing to progress legal processes in the United Kingdom. Our legal team and our local lawyers in the UK are working on this. We would hope, as in all such commercial matters, we're one of several claimants against the warehousing company that went into liquidation over the remaining grain that they had in storage, and we would hope there will be ultimately a settlement without the full requirement of court action and so on, but I can't give you a definitive time on that, I'm afraid. Sir?
Sorry, Jeff Paisley is my name. What I would like to ask is the cost of the factoring.
Yeah, it's a good question. Mark, would you like to respond to that too?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. Cost of factoring is actually comparable in what it costs us for working capital. So there really is a very minimal difference when we equate what is the cost from an interest perspective.
Yeah, this may not always have been the case, but it is at the moment in the market at the moment. It's very little premium required for the factoring. Thank you. Are there any questions online?
Yes, we have one question, Chairman. This is a question from Raymond Wang. You mentioned that your volume declined by a small amount in the first quarter. Are you losing market share, or is this due to a general market softness during this period?
Thank you, Mark. You might want to respond, but my general sense is we're not losing market share at all.
Yeah, it's not a market share lost. And we've seen it in a number of our brewing customers that are public that have also put out their information. The first quarter for us, of course, is October, November, December. December ended up being a pretty flat month. So it was really more a tail on the back end of that. We are seeing data that's picking back up in January. So we just think it was a timing event that was going on in the marketplace and with distributors. Certainly, they still have concerns about potential recession and what impact that could have. But, again, what we're seeing in the January numbers to date, it doesn't appear like that's happening.
And on the topic of market share, it might be worth commenting also for the minimum shareholders that we have a pretty tight capacity situation for malt generally in the countries in which we operate. And with the increase in construction costs, some of which have affected us, of course, in Scotland in recent times, there's a great inhibition for people to expand their capacity in the near term. It also takes quite a long time to do that. So we're looking at a pretty healthy capacity utilization, which means loss of market share isn't a major concern for us. Would you like to comment on that, Mark?
I think you said it well, Graham. Obviously, with the inflationary costs in the past 18 months, the cost to actually put up a plant, it has grown substantially. If it's, you know, from steel, it's manufacturing, labor costs, all of that. So there is somewhat of a reluctance, actually, to put more capacity in the marketplace. And we're seeing virtually every region is operating at pretty good full utilization.
Thank you. Any more online questions? Good. Well, if there are none others in the room, it would be now time to move on to the other matters of business. Ladies and gentlemen, as set out in the notice of meeting and the explanatory memorandum, there are three items of business for today. Each one is set out there, and we'll show them on the screen when we come to each of them. They'll be considered separately. I'll first outline the resolution, then ask for questions, and then we'll display the proxy votes that we've received prior to the meeting in relation to each agenda item. The first agenda item of business is to receive United Malt's financial report and statements for the year ended 30 September 2022, as well as the report of the directors and the auditors. The resolution is up there on the screen. This, there is a separate agenda item relating to the remuneration report, and we'll come to that in a moment. There is no vote required on this first agenda item. It's for discussion only, but I will ask, are there any questions in relation to it? There don't appear to be any. Are there any online?
We don't have any online questions.
Thank you very much. Then, if there are no more questions, I'll declare that the reports have been received and we'll move on to the other items of business. The next item, number two, is the adoption of the FY22 remuneration report. This resolution is shown on the screen, very straightforward. Before calling for questions on the remuneration report, I'd like to make a few comments, and I think as shareholders are aware, this is an advisory vote only, although we, of course, as directors, take account of any concerns or issues that shareholders may raise in relation to our remuneration policies. Our basic executive remuneration structures did not change in FY22. None of our senior executives received any increase in base pay except for Mr. Betchard, who's the head of our warehouse and distribution business, whose remuneration was reviewed and found to be below relevant market benchmarks. In view of the company's poor performance during the year, no executive received any short-term incentive award in FY22, even though several of the corporate scorecard objectives were partially achieved. In this regard, the board exercised the discretion not to pay bonuses, given the lack of alignment that that would have caused with shareholders' experience. Nor did the FY20 long-term incentive awards, which were tested to vest in 30 September 22, none of those vested because the relevant hurdles were not achieved during the 3 years to September. Non-executive director fees were not changed in FY22. Now, the board has made a number of adjustments to executive remuneration policies for FY23, and the most significant of them I'd like to mention. Firstly, we've reweighted the short-term incentive hurdles under our corporate scorecard to put greater weight on the delivery of financial performance and specifically our earnings before interest, tax and depreciation. This will account for now 70% of the corporate scorecard versus 50% the previous years. We've also reduced the proportion of senior executive incentives based on their personal objectives as distinct from the scorecard from 40% to 30%, and this again has the effect of increasing the emphasis on the delivery of financial performance during the current financial year. Lastly, we have simplified our long-term incentive plan hurdles to focus on only two measures, namely return on capital employed and absolute shareholder returns. The FY23 long-term incentive award will not include a hurdle related to delivery of strategic objectives, which have been hurdles we've used in the past 2 years. It's the board's view that the most important focus of our executive team over the next 3 years is to increase the return on capital and the company's share price also, which should be reflected in improved performance in terms of return on capital. Accordingly, we've materially increased the hurdles and the targets for both return on capital employed and absolute total shareholder return. I'd be happy to make any further comments or respond to any questions in relation to the remuneration report if there are any in the meeting before I put this resolution. So are there any questions on remuneration? There don't seem to be any in the room. Are there any online?
We have no questions online, Chair.
All right. Well, thank you very much. If there are no further questions, if there are no questions, I'll put the resolution to the vote and the proxy votes on this resolution will be shown on the screen now. I can't read them from here, there we go. But as you can see, there is a high majority of votes cast in favour of this resolution. So I would ask you to mark your voting cards in relation to this matter before we move on to the next item of business. My pleasure to put forward the next two resolutions, which are set out in the notice of meeting and relate to the election of two new directors to the board of the company. Firstly, the first resolution is to elect Mr. Patrick Bowe, who was, as I mentioned earlier, who was appointed to the board on the 1st of September last year and offers himself for election today. Details of Patrick's skills and experience are included in the notice of meeting, but I will now invite him, assuming our technology will work, to address the meeting briefly. Over to you.
Great. Thank you, Graham. Can you hear me fine?
Yeah, good in the room.
Okay, great. Thank you, Graham, and good morning, everyone. I'm honored to have this opportunity to stand for election to the Board of Directors of the United Malt Group. As you can see from the notice of meeting, I've spent my entire 40-year career in agribusiness and have a deep understanding of global commodity markets and food ingredient processing. And I began my career with Louis Dreyfus Corporation as a grain merchant. I then enjoyed a 30-year career at Cargill in several business units holding several roles. These included commodity trading, sales, plant management, and commercial leadership, trading, and other positions, including running Cargill's corn wet milling business in Brazil, president of Cargill's corn wet milling business in North America, which manufactured corn sweeteners and other products, with considerable sales to the brewing industry. So that's how I got exposure to the brewing market. My last position at Cargill was corporate vice president for the global food ingredients platform, which was a $25 billion business operating in 30 countries. Currently, I am CEO of The Andersons, which is a Fortune 500 company in grain trading, storage and handling, fertilizer distribution, and ethanol production. We have sales of $14 billion U.S. dollars in revenues, and we operate in 120 locations. I believe I offer the skills and experience in leadership, global agribusiness, and commodity trading, food ingredient processing, as well as deep capability in strategy and capital allocation disciplines to add significant value to United Malt. Although I'm an active executive CEO, I have the time, capabilities, and capacity for the duties of the United Malt Board. I've already dedicated much time to meet with the management team and visit facilities. I've also been active in participating in the board search process to select a new CEO. I have a genuine affinity with agricultural businesses and have a deep understanding of the economics of transforming a farm commodity into an end consumer ingredient on a global scale. I believe it is these disciplines that are in place to manage risk, the capabilities of people and culture, and a strong customer focus that delivers value for shareholders. So in closing, I'm honored to put my name forward for election to the United Malt Board. Thank you, shareholders, and thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Patrick. I think, as you can see, we're just delighted to have the depth of industry experience that Pat has brought to the board. And his election is unanimously supported by Pat's colleagues, Patrick's colleagues here on the board. Are there any questions, please?
Thanks. Thank you. Thank you. My name is Helen Manning. I'm from the Australian Shareholders Association. And we usually ask the question, about workload, because when there are problems with a business, you need to devote time, board time. And I'm just trying to get an idea. You say you do have the time. Active CEO, what sort of times do you put in, for example? How do you sort of rate the amount of time that you could need, you need for this kind of work?
Helen, thank you for the question. Before Pat responds, I'd like to comment that Pat joined us in September, and I am very, very grateful for the amount of time he has committed to us. He's been instrumental in helping us recruit our our next North American director, which was quite an exhaustive process where we interviewed many candidates. He's been very available to do that. Similarly with the CEO search, but also in terms of attendance at our facilities, visiting plants, and supporting the strategy development discussions of the board. Pat's been, you know, very, very active, and there's been no issue at all about his availability. So I just wanted to say that from the point of view of the board before we put Pat on the spot in terms of your question.
Yeah, thank you, Helen, for your question. I think it's a very good question and one that I took very seriously when considering this job. It said I'm an active CEO of a U.S. company, which has, you know, considerable time demands. But I also was involved as chair of a local nonprofit board that I'm no longer in that role, and another nonprofit organization that I was leading. So there's two things I've been able to free up time from. As the chairman said, I've had the time to travel to Canada and out to Oregon to the corporate offices in Vancouver, as well as spend much time on the phone. And the beauty of the North America, Australia, when I've been on the phone many nights here, which actually works quite well when it's the daytime there. So that works pretty well. And we, in fact, was on the phone here just last night. We had a board meeting this week. So I've been able to find the time available, and it's not been an issue at all. And have worked in this capacity before and able to balance that out. And I also have a very good admin assistant who manages my schedule very, very tightly. So I feel pretty comfortable being able to handle this.
Thank you. Thank you. We do ask the question. The other question we have is, because you're in a similar businesses, do you see any area for conflict of interest?
Also a good question, Helen. Our company, the Andersons, is a major grain company in North America as well, shipping around the world, but we do not handle barley or malt. So we're not involved in any way in production or distribution or trading of barley and malt. Some feed barley trading, but that's not part of a conflict at all with United Malt. So I've had a lot of experience with Cargill, as previous background in the malt business and in with the brewing sector, but have no conflict of interest with the Andersons and United Malt.
Thank you. Thank you for the question, Helen. It's one of the trade-offs we always make in engaging a new director with deep industry experience is that there are inevitably potential conflicts, and we just need to handle them appropriately. But we did explore this in detail with Pat, and he would not have taken the position if his current company would have had any specific business conflict with us. Thank you for the questions. Are there any other questions on this resolution? Well, if not, the proxy votes cast on this resolution will come up on the screen now. And as you see, there's 99.8% voted in favour. So this, there's every chance this resolution will be overwhelmingly supported when we count the final votes. I'll put the resolution to the vote now, so please fill in your yellow voting cards for you in the room or those of you who are online. Please cast your vote on this resolution. And we'll move on to the next item, which is the election of Christine Feldmanis. Christine was appointed to the board on the 1st of January and offers herself for re-election today. Again, details of her experience are set out in the notice of meeting, and I'll invite Christine to address the meeting, please.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the introduction, Graham. It's great to have a room full of people. It's such a change from the last few years. The notice of meeting sets out my executive career, but in the first instance, I'd just like to say that I feel very privileged to be in a position to be invited to become a board member of United Malt and seek your endorsement, but equally choose to represent shareholders' interest in this non-executive position. So the outline of the meeting gives a summary of my executive career and the current board roles that I have, and I think it represents the accumulated skills and experience that I've garnered over the years across both public, private and government arenas. My board experience has naturally dovetailed with the financial background that I've always worked in, and allowed me to participate in organisations that are very operational. So I sit on the board of an infrastructure, water, food and agriculture sector organisations. In my NED roles, I'm a chair of the audit committee of an ASX-listed company and also an infrastructure trust that owns physical assets on behalf of superannuation assets or superannuation funds, as well as the I chair the audit committee for Rabobank Australia. These entities, all like United Malt, have international operations and exposures. I think the experience that I've gained from an ASX-listed entity, a portfolio of global operational infrastructure assets, and a global bank dedicated exclusively to financing requirements for food and agribusinesses are highly complementary to being a NED on United Malt Group. A lot is spoken these days about bringing your whole self to a role and making sure that you're authentically involved and really genuinely interested in the types of roles that you take on. And I wanted to share with you part of the reason why I was delighted to be invited to join the board of United Malt. It's a global operating business. It's dependent on natural ingredient cultivated in the earth and nurtured through all weathers by dedicated farmers. It's processed by passionate people with quality, and the end result is delivering consumers an enjoyable product. That transformation of barley to malt and into a beverage is something that I can personally relate to. Since 1999, my husband and I have bred beef cattle and sheep, both at stud and commercial levels. So I'm very personally acquainted with the efforts and, dare I say, the risk management associated with transforming an agricultural product from farm to fork, or in United Malt's case, from the paddock to the beverage. I think this combination of skills, experience, qualifications, both professionally and personally, add an independent perspective and experience that brings a different perspective and value to the board, and also hopefully will assist that fiduciary governance that the board has in relation to delivering value to shareholders. I work actively and diligently on achieving strong performance and financial returns on capital investment and returns for shareholders. And I think I just wanted to add a piece to the Australian shareholders' question. The issue of time allocation is something that is always critical when you assume a new role. I do have a couple of other roles, and on the conflict of interest matter with Rabobank, that is taken very, very seriously by both Rabobank and Uniting Malt. And prior to being in a position to be able to accept an appointment to the board, that needed to be cleared with both Rabobank and fully disclosed to Uniting Malt. But at a board level, you obviously have no level of involvement in underlying bank decisions around lending. From a timing perspective, I think a little bit to Pat's comment as well, the way in which you manage your time and consider whether or not you have the capacity to take on a board role, it's critical to understand the flow of an organisation, when the financial year end is, and the nature of the operations, and balance that up with your existing commitments. I've done that very thoroughly and given it a lot of thought and feel very comfortable that I can commit on that level. So on that basis, I stand here and request your support and give my very, very strong, commitment to working in the interests of shareholders and for the betterment of the company. Thank you.
Thank you again, Christine. Again, the board unanimously recommends the election of Christine to the board. I would just like to add that she brings a very valuable mix of experience to us, including her experience with one of the world's leading agricultural-focused banks, as well as her own personal involvement in agricultural endeavours. I would also like to comment that Christine has arrived on our board at a time when our a very dedicated chair of Audit and Risk Committee has some health issues, and so Christine has stepped in as interim chair of our Audit and Risk Committee for the next 6 months to relieve a little bit of that burden from Terry Williamson while he makes his recovery. So are there any questions in relation to this resolution? No hands in the room. Any from the online?
No online questions
on this item of business. So, ladies and gentlemen, the proxies that have been cast on this matter are shown on the screen. And once again, you'll see there's 99.8% of the proxies were in favour of this resolution. So I'll now put the resolution. Please complete your voting cards if you haven't done so already. So, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the formal business of this meeting. Before I open up to any final questions, could I remind you to fill in your cards for those of you in the room, and they'll be collected in a moment, or as you leave the room. Shareholders who are attending online, you will now have 5 minutes to submit your votes after the meeting concludes. So the polls will remain open until then. There's a countdown timer which you'll see appearing on your screen if you happen to be voting online. Any final questions or comments from anyone who's here today? Sir. Ah, yes, you prefer to receive the paper report, do you? As I do.
I do, but I don't need it sent through the post and end up a mess. But I do enjoy coming along to the meeting and picking it up here. So it saves a bit of postage.
Well, we print a lot fewer of them these days, which is an important economy for us, but we do plan to continue to have them available hard copy. We no longer print our sustainability report. That one you'll have to see online, but that's also a very valuable document. Any other final comments or questions? I don't see any. None online, I assume. So, ladies and gentlemen, I will now formally close the business, the meeting, and I will invite you to join us outside for some refreshments. Thank you very much for attending.